And now, let's turn to Inside the City, a weekly chat with local officials, residents, and personalities providing up-to-date and relevant information about what's happening in your city of Palmer. Moderated by Mike Malevsky.
My great pleasure to welcome into the studio this morning none other than Palmer's Chief of Police, Lance Ketterling. Welcome.
Thanks, Mike. Good morning.
So we are enjoying the sort of end of summer and move toward the fair, Alaska State Fair. And for some people, that means a very different pace of life. And we've talked about this in part in the past. Maybe it's a good place to begin. The Palmer Police Department has a responsibility for an area that is going to be visited by, some say, roughly 300,000 people, bigger crowd than we normally enjoy.
That's true. I spoke to Jerry Baker down at the State Fair earlier this week, late last week. At any rate, last year's attendance was just shy of 300,000 people. It was 294, 296, something along those lines. And it does seem to be regularly increasing, depending on things like weather and different acts that are coming. But on a sunny Saturday, there could very easily be 50 to 60,000 people down that come through the fair. It turns Palmer of about 7,000 people into a much larger city every year.
And maybe that's part of the theme of what I'd be interested in talking about today. And Palmer is a relatively small community, 5,000 people or so. We sit not too far away from the largest city in the state of Alaska, and that's, of course, Anchorage. And the two situations, I think, are seem to be very different from a policing standpoint. I know that the Anchorage Police Department is very large, has a lot of divisions and people and a fairly large administrative capacity too, because of the nature of what they do.
Sure.
And here we are leaner. I think that's a safe thing to say. But what would you say if you were to describe maybe just the differences of what it means to be a policeman here in Palmer versus probably in any large city, not just Anchorage? What kind of differences would you remind people that?
Well, that's a great question, and there are some significant differences, and then of course there's some similarities as well. You're absolutely right. Anchorage, largest city in the state, clearly, and between the valley and Anchorage, you have well over half the state's population in an area, you know, around 40 to 50 miles between the two groups. So, and the valley, of course, is growing very fast. So there's a number of challenges that come with that. To get specifically to your question, the differences between Anchorage and Palmer, I would say one of the biggest ones is just recognition of the individual officers and those individual officers having a better opportunity, I think, in Palmer to get to know individual businesses, individual citizens, individual issues that families might be having, simply because we've been practicing this community-oriented policing thing just as a necessity since basically Palmer has been in existence. It's a relatively small department, 15 sworn, serving a city of about 7,000 folks. And Wasilla is in a similar issue, although they are experiencing some growing pains. They have, I think, 24 to 26 officers in a slightly larger city. And they seem to be more, let's call it, retail-oriented in their approach to city building than we are, which is a little bit less retail-oriented. And so we have officers that are very well acquainted with individual challenges that just distinct households are having, to say nothing of blocks or businesses or certain locations in town. So it makes it a little bit easier. The officers become a known quantity to people. We frequently have people calling up and requesting to speak to individual officers because they've dealt with that particular family's problems before, where that may be less likely in Anchorage. It's not unheard of in Anchorage. It does happen there, absolutely. But it's probably a little bit more common out here.
I'm thinking back to my own experience. I've worked as a counselor in the past in very small schools, situations where I was the only person and I did everything. I have been involved with larger entities where there were multiple counselors, for example, and we divided up a population of students. And I'm also familiar with Anchorage, which has some of the larger schools in the state. And I remember having a conversation with counselors who worked in Anchorage school system, and I realized the difference that seemed to parallel what you're describing here for police officers. When you have kind of the umbrella view of the entire population, where you're doing a variety of different things, and you're not just dedicated to being in one department focused on one category of work. It changes, at least for me, it seemed to change my sense of what it meant to be relating to people. It didn't mean that a counselor in a large school wasn't relating to the group of students there, but that was a subset, typically.
Sure.
And you lost the bigger picture more easily, kind of thing. Well, part of the reason I brought this up is that it was a very interesting article in the Alaska Dispatch News by Devin Kelly recently, and it involved a fire station serving downtown Anchorage and pointed out that the number of calls has increased dramatically in that area, and there have been apparently violent episodes and so on. So the Anchorage Fire Department decided last month to start automatically sending backup or requesting police assistance before going to any of these places. And I thought that was both a change, even in the city of Anchorage, indicating perhaps something. But I also was curious in terms of events here in Palmer. That's not normally the necessary case.
It is not the default setting for fire and ambulance to have police presence. Now, Here's another difference between Anchorage and Palmer. For medical calls, the Palmer Police Department tries to first respond, simply because there are times when we can get there sooner and the officers have some first aid training, CPR, they know how to use AEDs, and of course now Narcan kits, and can sometimes get there and provide aid faster. So we wind up, just by nature of us responding to these calls, sometimes going there as well and then turning the scene over to medics. And then certainly on things like house fires, we go just to see if we can help out with traffic control, that sort of thing. It is not, however, the default setting that they request police backup all the time. Having said that, there are individual houses and in some cases individuals that have notations that if this person is having a medical crisis that they would prefer police respond as well because this individual has been hostile in the past and has caused some distress to medics or firefighters and they'd certainly like some help with that. And of course we go to those as well.
Okay. Very good. Now you've mentioned drugs, the use of Narcan. I know that there has been an opioid task force at work here in the Valley, and it has received a lot of good press. It seems to be doing good work. And does the Palmer Police Department have an involvement directly with that task force?
Peripherally is what I would say. There are a great many different groups going on right now that are trying to combat the opioid problem, and Palmer is very involved with a lot of them. So if you're referring to the opioid task force that Michael Carson is heading up, then we have some involvement with that, but it's not heavy.
Okay. So, and since we've both nationally and here locally, we've had discussion of what appears to be an increased use of opioids. From your perspective, how would you characterize the growth of the problem, if you will?
Well, it's interesting, and I'll just speak frankly for a while. The problem is as bad as I have seen it in Palmer, and I started here in 1997, so 20 years ago, and this is clearly the largest heroin and opioid problem that we have seen in this city and in my recollection across the country. And there's probably several reasons for that. One is that a lot of people that are using heavily and may have overdosed and frankly died in years prior would have slowed the spread of this problem because it would have potentially, and I hate to say it in terms that might seem cold, but it may have killed itself off because quite a few people were just simply dying as a result of their opioid use. Whereas now we have better services in place. And so addiction is a, a lifelong challenge. It's a process that people have to go through. And so we're getting better at helping people, but it's also potentially lengthening the time that this problem has been so acute, because people are living longer, whereas earlier they may have had some challenges where they may have simply passed away from an overdose. And now things like Narcan, which I think is a great thing, we're in the business of saving people, but some people that would have died are still with us. As a result of that, it's a life-saving drug, and those individuals don't always get clean immediately. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't.
Okay. So in terms of Narcan, officers as well as ambulance personnel, do they carry Narcan?
They do, yes. Okay.
Any sense of how often that is something that is applied?
About half a dozen times since June when they were trained to use it. And on, I think, 4 or 5 of those individuals actually saved, and one individual passed away as it was. And that's just here in Palmer. So the officers use it a fair amount.
If I you know, for maybe the average listener who is coming through Palmer, perhaps at the shopping or coming down the streets or coming to an event, it might be that it's not obvious that there is a drug problem. I mean, it is a situation which in some cases appears to be beneath the surface.
That's true.
And yet we're saying there is this problem. It is there, et cetera. What, in terms of someone who has been using heroin, for example, and is found in a situation where Narcan is administered, what is the follow-up to that?
Well, the follow-up is they need to get medical care.
Sure.
This has been a life-threatening situation. And so we always do our level best to make sure that they go with the ambulance to the hospital to get professional medical help. Again, it's the equivalent. If we use an automated external defibrillator on somebody that was having a heart attack, that person needs to get an ambulance and go to the hospital. Same thing in this particular situation. And while they're at the hospital, hopefully they will choose to avail themselves of some services to try to kick this habit.
Is there a particular, if someone is using a prohibited substance of this sort, where does the court system or the criminal justice system intervene with this process?
Well, it's a tough question to answer just pat. These situations are all unique. Each and every one of them is its own unique situation. So in most cases, we are focused on the medical side of it when we roll up on an overdose. As a matter of fact, with all the overdoses that we've had here in the last several months, we are concentrating on the life-saving measures taken to keep this person going. And any criminal investigation would certainly be of secondary importance if one even exists at all. And often it does not. A lot of the times with these, you roll up on them and there is no apparent controlled substances. There's paraphernalia, spoons, syringes, grinding, pill grinders, that sort of thing. But there's not any weight. There's no quantity of an illegal substance around because this person's just used it all. And so even if we were inclined in those situations to do a criminal investigation for misconduct involving a controlled substance, there wouldn't be evidence there to do it. Because the courts have held that a drug in someone's system, strangely, does not constitute possession for a criminal case. So now the only time that might be an issue is when we're talking DUI drugs, in which case now you're arresting somebody for driving or operating a motor vehicle under the influence of a drug, which we do regularly. And we have some drug recognition experts that are pretty skilled in detection of which type of controlled substance someone might be on. But barring any other crime, a drug in someone's system does not constitute possession as far as the courts are concerned.
That is fascinating. This is the first time I've actually thought about that to that point, and that's very interesting. I suspect many listeners were unaware of that situation.
Yeah. Maybe.
Okay. So we talked earlier a little bit about the fact that 300,000 people are coming, the state fair begins, and the Palmer Police Department has a role to play there, although this Alaska State Fair does hire its own security, a large number of people, it seems, that are available there to handle things. Remind listeners when, because I occasionally see Palmer Police Department there.
Sure.
One way or the other. How does that work? What's your role there as compared to the security people who are working there?
Well, First Security is responsible basically for just maintaining safety in the broadest sense at the Alaska State Fair. And then we respond for specific incidents. So to answer your question, if there's just a general problem, the fair will probably try to handle it in-house. And if there's a criminal activity of some kind afoot, then they will call us and we'll come and investigate that and pursue charges as appropriate.
Okay.
So, but generally, security for things like perhaps somebody that's been trespassed from the fair and they just need to get them to leave again, security might very well handle that on their own. People that have maybe had a little bit too much to drink, they might usher them out on their own. Low-level thefts from the vendors, which happen with distressing regularity. These mm-hmm. folks are getting ripped off by fairgoers sometimes. They may very well just give them a trespass notification and send them on their way, tell them not to come back. So more major things, drug activity, major fights or assaults, any potential crowd control problems, that kind of stuff that are significant, then of course they'll call us and we'll respond to that.
Okay. That leads me to a question about the Alaska State Troopers. They sort of have the surrounding area. In terms of the fair, and we have the security people at the fair, Palmer Police Department, troopers' role, what's that in regard to the fair?
Well, theirs is basically one of a little bit of extra manpower that they have every year during this time. And they're down in the area simply because of the increase in population, the increase in activity. So they work the roads very heavy. They tend to do a lot of traffic enforcement on the roads outside the fairgrounds that are state trooper jurisdiction. And then, of course, if it's in the city or in the fairgrounds, then it belongs to Palmer PD. They're also available for backup situations that might be needed because the police department, the Palmer PD, runs probably anywhere from 4 to 6 officers on at a time during the state fair.
Right.
Which is 2 to 3 times more than we normally do because the officers don't get any days off during this period. They work straight through it. And so even with that extra manpower, a couple of calls can absorb all those resources within a couple of minutes. And so we might very well need to ask for assistance from another organization just to help out with routine matters. Okay. And the troopers have been great with that as well.
Okay. Okay. In your time being associated with the Palmer Police Department, it seems to me I only remember a few times when there was any crowd control or other types of incidents at the fair. Am I right or am I misremembering?
No, you're absolutely correct in terms of that. Usually the crowds, the typical problem is with parking and the roads. So it's a vehicular crowding as much as anything else. The fairgoers are remarkably wonderful folks. You know, even when you do have 50,000 or 60,000 people at the fair, generally they behave themselves really, really well because they're there to have a good time. So the only time you do have occasional issues, it's usually localized to a few people and maybe some surrounding folks that there's been a fight, there's some alcohol involved in this. Occasionally there's gang activity from Anchorage that manifests itself out in the parking lot and you have several groups that are bumping chests or something a little bit more serious. And that can involve some peripheral folks. And the goal in those situations is always to contain it and keep it as small as possible so it doesn't become a large crowd problem.
Okay. Okay. Well, I've asked a whole lot of questions and I'm curious whether at this point, as you're looking at the upcoming year, are there changes in numbers of personnel, equipment, or anything else that will affect the way the Palmer Police Department is going to be functioning?
Well, we have a couple in the academy right now, and we're really looking forward to getting them back in November and having them cut loose to do police activity on their own. They're still in training at the moment. So beyond that, new technology, no, nothing major coming up as far as that goes. We do have an officer that will be detailed to a DEA task force to focus on prescription opiates.
Okay.
That will be coming up, and we anticipate that officer being detailed to that sometime around the end of this year or early next. So that will be a change there.
Okay, one of my favorite topics has to be cameras.
Sure.
And they're working and all. And
They work very well. The officers love them. They collect great evidence, and they're a very helpful tool for the officers is what we found. And for our department, they work very well.
Okay, I know some other departments have had on the books sort of the requirement to use them. There have been some notorious incidents where, for one reason or another, they were not turned on.
Sure.
But here, pretty much, their requirement is to use them. What if a listener is not sure, because this camera isn't going every moment of the day.
It is not. No, we simply don't have there's no need for it to run 24/7. So they basically turn them on when they're responding to something that's going to involve citizen contact. If it's a traffic stop, if they're going to a call for service, then yes, they will turn on their body cam and try to record that incident. Now, having said that, just like the microcassette recorders in years past, this is a piece of technology. And
right.
Most of the time, it works very well. There are going to be occasions where it fails. Batteries go dead. A switch doesn't get flipped. But the practice is to turn them on when you're engaged in enforcement activity of any kind. So, and then once that particular call for service is over, they're turned off.
Well, Mike Malevsky here. I've been talking with Palmer Police Chief Lance Ketterling, and we've been going over a whole bunch of stuff that I think may give a listener a better perspective about the Palmer Police Department and how it is both a police department like other police departments around the country, and yet it's different. Okay. Well, thank you for coming in.
Thanks, today. Mike. Appreciate it.
You've been listening to Inside the City, a weekly chat with local folks providing up-to-date and relevant information about what's happening in your city of Palmer, moderated by Mike Malevsky. This program is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of moderators and guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, the station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions, please email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.